When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Chapter 15 of Fathers and Sons. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by Roger Moline. Fathers and Sons by Ivan Turgenev. Translated by Richard Hare. Chapter 15. "We'll soon see to what species of mammal this specimen belongs," Bazarov said to Arkady the following day, as they mounted the staircase of the hotel where Madame Odintsov was staying. "I can smell something wrong here." "I'm surprised at you," cried Arkady. "What, you, of all people, Bazarov, clinging to that narrow morality which—" "What a funny fellow you are," said Bazarov carelessly, cutting him short. "Don't you know that in my dialect, and for my purpose, something wrong means something right? That's just my advantage. Didn't you tell me yourself this morning that she made a strange marriage, though to my mind, to marry a rich old man is far from a strange thing to do, but on the contrary, sensible enough? I don't believe the gossip of the town, but I should like to think, as our enlightened governor says, that it's just." Arkady made no answer, and knocked at the door of the apartment. A young servant in livery ushered the two friends into a large room, furnished in bad taste like all Russian hotel rooms, but filled with flowers. Madame Odintsov soon appeared in a simple morning dress. In the light of the spring sunshine she looked even younger than before. Arkady introduced Bazarov, and noticed with concealed astonishment that he seemed embarrassed, while Madame Odintsov remained perfectly calm, as she had been on the previous day. Bazarov was himself conscious of feeling embarrassed, and was annoyed about it. "What an idea! Frightened of a female," he thought, and, lolling in an armchair, quite like Sitnikov, he began to talk in an exaggeratedly casual manner, while Madame Odintsov kept her clear eyes fixed on him. Anna Sergeyevna Odintsova was the daughter of Sergei Nikolaevich Loktev, notorious for his personal beauty, speculations, and gambling, who, after 15 years of a stormy and sensational life in Petersburg and Moscow, ended by ruining himself completely at cards, and was obliged to retire to the country, where, soon afterwards, he died, leaving a very small property to his two daughters, Anna, a girl of 20 at that time, and Katya, a child of 12. Their mother, who belonged to an impoverished princely family, had died in Petersburg while her husband was still in his heyday. Anna's position after her father's death was a very difficult one. The brilliant education which she had received in Petersburg had not fitted her for the cares of domestic and household economy, nor for an obscure life buried in the country. She knew no one in the whole neighborhood, and there was no one she could consult. Her father had tried to avoid all contact with his neighbors. He despised them in his way, and they despised him in theirs. However, she did not lose her head, and promptly sent for a sister of her mother's, Princess Avdotya Stepanovna, X, a spiteful, arrogant old lady, who, on instilling herself in her niece's house, appropriated the best rooms for herself, grumbled and scolded from morning till night, and refused to walk a step, even in the garden, without being attended by her one and only serf, a surly footman in a threadbare pea-green livery with light blue trimming and a three-cornered hat. Anna patiently put up with all her aunt's caprices, gradually set to work on her sister's education, and, it seemed, was already reconciled to the idea of fading away in the wilderness. But fate had decreed otherwise. She happened to be seen by a certain Odintsov, a wealthy man of 46, an eccentric hypochondriac, swollen, heavy and sour, but not stupid, and quite good-natured. He fell in love with her and proposed marriage. She agreed to become his wife, and they lived together for 6 years. Then he died, leaving her all his property. For nearly a year after his death, Anna Sergeyevna remained in the country. Then she went abroad with her sister, but stayed only in Germany. She soon grew tired of it and came back to live at her beloved Nikolsko, nearly 30 miles from the town of X. Her house was magnificent, luxuriously furnished, and had a beautiful garden with conservatories. Her late husband had spared no expense to gratify his wishes. Anna Sergeyevna rarely visited the town, and as a rule only on business. Even then she did not stay long. She was not popular in the province. There had been a fearful outcry when she married Odintsov. All sorts of slanderous stories were invented about her. It was asserted that she had helped her father in his gambling escapades, and even that she had gone abroad for a special reason to conceal some unfortunate consequences. "You understand?" the indignant gossips would conclude. "She has been through fire and water," they said of her, to which a noted provincial wit added, "And through the brass instruments." All this talk reached her, but she turned a deaf ear to it. She had an independent and sufficiently determined character. Madame Odintsov sat leaning back in her armchair, her hands folded, and listened to Bazarov. Contrary to his habit, he was talking a lot and was obviously trying to interest her, which also surprised Arkady. He could not be sure whether Bazarov had achieved his object, for it was difficult to learn from Anna Sergeyevna's face what impression was being made on her. It retained the same gracious, refined look. Her bright eyes shone with attention, but it was an unruffled attention. During the first minutes of the visit, Bazarov's awkward manners had impressed her disagreeably, like a bad smell or a discordant sound. But she saw at once that he was nervous, and that flattered her. Only the commonplace was repulsive to her, and no one would have accused Bazarov of being commonplace. Arkady had several surprises in store for him that day. He had expected that Bazarov would talk to an intelligent woman like Madame Odintsov about his convictions and views. She herself had expressed a desire to hear the man who dares to believe in nothing. But instead of that, Bazarov talked about medicine, about homeopathy, and about botany. It turned out that Madame Odintsov had not wasted her time in solitude. She had read a number of good books, and herself spoke an excellent Russian. She turned the conversation to music, but observing that Bazarov had no appreciation of art, quietly turned it back to botany, although Arkady was just launching out on a discourse about the significance of national melodies. Madame Odintsov continued to treat him as though he were a younger brother. She seemed to appreciate his good nature and youthful simplicity, and that was all. A lively conversation went on for over 3 hours, ranging freely over a variety of subjects. At last the friends got up and began to take their leave. Anna Sergeyevna looked at them kindly, held out her beautiful white hand to each in turn, and after a moment's thought, said with a diffident but delightful smile, "If you are not afraid of being bored, gentlemen, come and see me at Nikolsko." "Oh, Anna Sergeyevna," cried Arkady, "that will be the greatest happiness for me." "And you, Monsieur Bazarov?" Bazarov only bowed, and Arkady had yet another surprise. He noticed that his friend was blushing. "Well," he said to him in the street, "do you still think she's..." "Who can tell? Just see how frozen she is," answered Bazarov. Then, after a short pause, he added, "She's a real grand duchess, a commanding sort of person. She only needs a train behind her and a crown on her head." "Our grand duchesses can't talk Russian like that," observed Arkady. "She has known ups and downs, my lad. She's been hard up." "Anyhow, she's delightful," said Arkady. "What a magnificent body," went on Bazarov. "How I should like to see it on the dissecting table." "Stop, for heaven's sake, Evgeny. You go too far." "Well, don't get angry, you baby. I meant it's first rate. We must go to stay with her."
"When?"
"Well, why not the day after tomorrow? What is there to do here? Drink champagne with Kukshina? Listen to your cousin, the liberal statesman? Let's be off the day after tomorrow. By the way, my father's little place is not far from there. This Nikolsko is on the X road, isn't it?"
"Yes."
"Excellent. Why hesitate? Leave that to fools and intellectuals. I say, what a splendid body." 3 days later, the two friends were driving along the road to Nikolsko. The day was bright and not too hot, and the plump post-horses trotted smartly along, flicking their tied and plaited tails. Arkady looked at the road, and, without knowing why, he smiled.
"Congratulate me!" exclaimed Bazarov suddenly. "Today's the 22nd of June, my saint's day. Let us see how he will watch over me. They expect me home today," he added, dropping his voice.
"Well, they can wait. What does it matter?" End of chapter 15. Recording by Roger Moline. Chapter 16 of Fathers and Sons. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by Roger Moline. Fathers and Sons by Ivan Turgenev. Translated by Richard Hare. Chapter 16. The country house in which Anna Sergeyevna lived stood on the slope of a low hill not far from a yellow stone church with a green roof, white columns, and decorated with a fresco over the main entrance representing the Resurrection of Christ in the Italian style. Especially remarkable for its voluminous contours was the figure of a swarthy soldier in a helmet, sprawling in the foreground of the picture. Behind the church stretched a long village street with chimneys peeping out here and there from thatched roofs. The manor house was built in the same style as the church, the style now famous as that of Alexander I. The whole house was painted yellow, and it had a green roof, white columns, and a pediment with a coat of arms carved on it. The provincial architect had designed both buildings according to the instructions of the late Odintsov, who could not endure, as he expressed it, senseless and arbitrary innovations. The house was flanked on both sides by the dark trees of an old garden. An avenue of clipped pines led up to the main entrance. Our friends were met in the hall by two tall footmen in livery. One of them ran at once to fetch the butler. The butler, a stout man in a black tailcoat, promptly appeared and led the visitors up a staircase, covered with rugs, into a specially prepared room in which two beds had been arranged with every kind of toilet accessory. It was evident that order reigned in the house. Everything was clean, and there was everywhere a peculiar dignified fragrance such as one encounters in ministerial reception rooms.
"Anna Sergeyevna asks you to come to see her in half an hour," the butler announced. "Have you any orders to give, meanwhile?"
"No orders, my good sir," answered Bazarov. "But perhaps you will kindly trouble yourself to bring a glass of vodka?"
"Certainly, sir," said the butler, looking rather surprised, and went out, his boots creaking.
"What grand genre," remarked Bazarov. "That's what you call it in your set, I think. A grand duchess complete."
"A nice grand duchess," answered Arkady, "to invite straight away such great aristocrats as you and me to stay with her.
Especially me, a future doctor and a doctor's son, and grandson of a village priest. You know that, I suppose. A village priest's grandson, like the statesman Speransky," added Bazarov, after a brief silence, pursing his lips. "Anyhow, she gives herself the best of everything, this pampered lady. Shan't we soon find ourselves wearing tailcoats?"
Arkady only shrugged his shoulders, but he, too, felt a certain embarrassment. Half an hour later, Bazarov and Arkady made their way together into the drawing-room. It was a large, lofty room, luxuriously furnished, but with little personal taste. Heavy, expensive furniture stood in a conventional stiff arrangement along the walls, which were covered in a buff wallpaper decorated with golden arabesques. Odintsov had ordered the furniture from Moscow through a wine merchant who was a friend and agent of his. Over a sofa in the center of one wall hung a portrait of a flabby, fair-haired man, which seemed to look disapprovingly at the visitors.
"It must be the late husband," whispered Bazarov to Arkady. "Shall we dash off?"
But at that moment the hostess entered. She wore a light muslin dress. Her hair, smoothly brushed back behind her ears, imparted a girlish expression to her pure, fresh face.
"Thank you for keeping your promise," she began. "You must stay a little while. You won't find it so bad here. I will introduce you to my sister. She plays the piano well." "That's a matter of indifference to you, Monsieur Bazarov. But you, Monsieur Kirsanov, are fond of music, I believe. Apart from my sister, an old aunt lives with me, and a neighbor sometimes comes over to play cards. That makes up our whole circle. And now let us sit down."
Madame Odintsov delivered this whole little speech very fluently and distinctly, as if she had learned it by heart. Then she turned to Arkady. It appeared that her mother had known Arkady's mother, and had even been her confidant in her love for Nikolai Petrovitch. Arkady began to talk with warm feeling about his dead mother. Meanwhile, Bazarov sat and looked through some albums.
"What a tame cat I've become," he thought.
A beautiful white wolfhound with a blue collar ran into the drawing-room and tapped on the floor with its paws. It was followed by a girl of 18 with a round and pleasing face and small dark eyes. In her hands she held a basket filled with flowers.
"This is my Katya," said Madame Odintsov, nodding in her direction.
Katya made a slight curtsy, sat down beside her sister, and began arranging the flowers. The wolfhound, whose name was Fifi, went up to both visitors in turn, wagging its tail and thrusting its cold nose into their hands.
"Did you pick them all yourself?" asked Madame Odintsov. "Yes," answered Katya. "Is Auntie coming down for tea?" "She's coming."
When Katya spoke, her face had a charming smile, at once bashful and candid, and she looked up from under her eyebrows with a kind of amusing severity. Everything about her was naive and undeveloped, her voice, the downy bloom on her face,
the rosy hands with white palms, and the rather narrow shoulders. She was constantly blushing, and she breathed quickly. Madame Odintsov turned to Bazarov. "You are looking at pictures out of politeness, Evgeny Vasilich," she began. "It doesn't interest you, so you had better come and join us, and we will have a discussion about something."
Bazarov moved nearer.
"What have you decided to discuss?" he muttered.
"Whatever you like.
I warn you, I am dreadfully argumentative."
"You?"
"Yes. That seems to surprise you. Why?"
"Because, so far as I can judge, you have a calm and cool temperament, and to be argumentative one needs to get excited."
"How have you managed to sum me up so quickly? In the first place, I am impatient and persistent. You should ask Katya. And secondly, I am very easily carried away."
Bazarov looked at Anna Sergeyevna. "Perhaps. You know best. Very well, if you want a discussion, so be it. I was looking at the views of Swiss mountains in your albums, and you remarked that they couldn't interest me. You said that because you suppose I have no artistic feeling, and it is true I have none. But those views might interest me from a geological standpoint, for studying the information of mountains, for instance."
"Excuse me, but as a geologist you would rather study a book, some special work on the subject, and not a drawing."
"The drawing shows me at one glance what might be spread over 10 pages in a book."
Anna Sergeyevna was silent for a few moments.
"So you have no feeling whatsoever for art?" she said, leaning her elbow on the table, and by so doing bringing her face nearer to Bazarov.
"How do you manage without it?"
"Why, what is it needed for, may I ask?"
"Well, at least to help one to know and understand people."
Bazarov smiled.
"In the first place, experience of life does that, and in the second, I assure you the study of separate individuals is not worth the trouble it involves. All people resemble each other, in soul as well as in body. Each of us has a brain, spleen, heart, and lungs of similar construction. The so-called moral qualities are the same in all of us. The slight variations are insignificant. It is enough to have one single human specimen in order to judge all the others. People are like trees in a forest. No botanist would think of studying each individual birch tree."
Katya, who was arranging the flowers one by one in a leisurely way, raised her eyes to Bazarov with a puzzled expression, and meeting his quick, casual glance, she blushed right up to her ears. Anna Sergeyevna shook her head.
"The trees in a forest," she repeated. "Then, according to you, there is no difference between a stupid and an intelligent person, or between a good and a bad one."
"No, there is a difference, as there is between the sick and the healthy. The lungs of a consumptive person are not in the same condition as yours or mine, although their construction is the same. We know more or less what causes physical ailments, but moral diseases are caused by bad education, by all the rubbish with which people's heads are stuffed from childhood onwards, in short, by the disordered state of society. Reform society, and there will be no diseases."
Bazarov said all this with an air as though he were all the while thinking to himself, "Believe me or not as you wish, it's all the same to me." He slowly passed his long fingers over his whiskers, and his eyes strayed round the room.
"And you suppose," said Anna Sergeyevna, "that when society is reformed there will be no longer any stupid or wicked people?"
"At any rate, in a properly organized society, it'll make no difference whether a man is stupid or clever, bad or good."
"Yes, I understand.
They will all have the same spleen.
Exactly, madam.
Madame Odintsov turned to Arkady. And what is your opinion, Arkady Nikolaevich?
I agree with Evgeny, he answered.
Katya looked at him from under her eyelids.
You amaze me, gentlemen, commented Madame Odintsov. But we will talk about this again. I hear my aunt now coming in to tea. We must spare her.
Anna Sergeyevna's aunt, Princess X, a small, shriveled woman with a pinched-up face like a fist, with staring, bad-tempered eyes under her gray brows, came in, and scarcely bowing to the guests, sank into a broad, velvet-covered armchair, in which no one except herself was privileged to sit. Katya put a stool under her feet. The old lady did not thank her or even look at her. Only her hand shook under the yellow shawl, which almost covered her decrepit body. The princess liked yellow. Even her cap had yellow ribbons.
"How did you sleep, auntie?" asked Madame Odintsov, raising her voice. "That dog here again," mumbled the old lady in reply, and noticing that Fifi was making two hesitating steps in her direction, she hissed loudly. Katya called Fifi and opened the door for her. Fifi rushed out gaily, imagining she was going to be taken for a walk, but when she found herself left alone outside the door, she began to scratch and whine. The princess frowned. Katya rose to go out.
"I expect tea is ready," said Madame Odintsov.
"Come, gentlemen. Auntie, will you go into tea?"
The princess rose from her chair without speaking and led the way out of the drawing-room. They all followed her into the dining-room. A little Cossack page drew back noisily from the table a chair covered with cushions, also dedicated to the princess, who sank into it. Katya, who poured out tea, handed her first a cup decorated with a coat of arms. The old lady helped herself to honey, which she put in her cup. She considered it both sinful and extravagant to drink tea with sugar in it, although she never spent a penny of her own on anything, and suddenly asked in a hoarse voice,
"And what does Prince Ivan write?"
No one made any reply. Bazarov and Arkady soon observed that the family paid no attention to her, although they treated her respectfully. "They put up with her because of her princely family," thought Bazarov. After tea, Anna Sergeyevna suggested that they should go out for a walk, but it began to rain a little, and the whole party, except the princess, returned to the drawing-room. The neighbor arrived, the devoted card-player. His name was Porfiry Platonych, a plump, grayish little man with short, spindly legs, very polite and jocular. Anna Sergeyevna, who still talked principally to Bazarov, asked him whether he would like to play an old-fashioned game of preference with them. Bazarov accepted, saying that he certainly needed to prepare himself in advance for the duties in store for him as a country doctor.
"You must be careful," remarked Anna Sergeyevna. "Porfiry Platonych and I will defeat you. And you, Katya," she added, "play something to Arkady Nikolaevich. He's fond of music, and we shall enjoy listening, too."
Katya went unwillingly to the piano, and Arkady, although he was genuinely fond of music, unwillingly followed her. It seemed to him that Madame Odintsov was getting rid of him, and he felt already like most young men of his age, a vague and oppressive excitement, like a foretaste of love. Katya lifted the lid of the piano, and without looking at Arkady, asked in an undertone,
"What am I to play to you?"
"What you like," answered Arkady indifferently.
"What sort of music do you prefer?"
went on Katya, without changing her attitude.
"Classical," answered Arkady in the same tone of voice. "Do you like Mozart?" "Yes, I like Mozart." Katya pulled out Mozart's Sonata Fantasia in C minor. She played very well, although a little too precisely and dryly. She sat upright and motionless without taking her eyes off the music, her lips tightly compressed, and only towards the end of the sonata her face started to glow, her hair loosened, and a little lock fell over her dark brow. Arkady was especially struck by the last part of the sonata, the part where the enchanting gaiety of the careless melody at its height is suddenly broken into by the pangs of such a sad and almost tragic suffering. But the ideas inspired in him by the sounds of Mozart were not related to Katya. Looking at her, he merely thought, "Well, that young lady doesn't play too badly, and she's not bad-looking either." When she had finished the sonata, Katya, without taking her hands from the keys, asked, "Is that enough?" Arkady said that he would not venture to trouble her further, and began talking to her about Mozart. He asked her whether she had chosen that sonata herself, or someone else had recommended it to her. But Katya answered him in monosyllables, and withdrew into herself. When this happened, she did not come out again quickly. At such times, her face took on an obstinate, almost stupid expression. She was not exactly shy, but she was diffident and rather overawed by her sister, who had educated her, but who never even suspected that such a feeling existed in Katya. Arkady was at length reduced to calling Fifi over to him, and stroking her on the head with a benevolent smile, in order to create the impression of being at his ease. Katya went on arranging her flowers. Meanwhile, Bazarov was losing and losing. Anna Sergeyevna played cards with masterly skill. Porfiry Platonich also knew how to hold his own. Bazarov lost a sum, which, though trifling in itself, was none too pleasant for him. At supper, Anna Sergeyevna again turned the conversation to botany. "Let us go for a walk tomorrow morning," she said to him. "I want you to teach me the Latin names of several wild plants and their species."
"What's the good of the Latin names to you?" asked Bazarov.
"Order is needed for everything," she answered.
"What a wonderful woman Anna Sergeyevna is," cried Arkady, when he was alone in their room with his friend.
"Yes," answered Bazarov, "a female with brains. And she's seen life, too."
"In what sense do you mean that, Evgeny Vasilich?"
"In a good sense, in a good sense, my worthy Arkady Nikolaevich. I'm sure she also manages her estate very efficiently. But what is wonderful is not her, but her sister."
"What, that little dark creature?"
"Yes, the little dark creature. She's fresh, untouched, and shy, and silent, anything you want. One could work on her and make something out of her. But the other, she's an experienced hand." Arkady did not answer Bazarov, and each of them got into bed occupied with his own particular thoughts. Anna Sergeyevna was also thinking about her guests that evening. She liked Bazarov for his absence of flattery and for his definite downright views. She found in him something new which she had not met before, and she was curious. Anna Sergeyevna was a rather strange person. Having no prejudices at all and no strong convictions either, she neither avoided things nor went out of her way to secure anything special. She was clear-sighted, and she had many interests, but nothing completely satisfied her. Indeed, she hardly desired any complete satisfaction. Her mind was at once inquiring and indifferent. Though her doubts were never soothed by forgetfulness, they never grew powerful enough to agitate her disagreeably.
Had she not been rich and independent, she would probably have thrown herself into the struggle and experienced passion. But life ran easily for her, although she was sometimes bored, and she went on from day to day without hurrying and only rarely feeling disturbed. Rainbow-colored visions sometimes glowed before her eyes, but she breathed more peacefully when they faded away, and she did not hanker after them. Her imagination certainly overstepped the limits of conventional morality, but all the time her blood flowed as quietly as ever in her charmingly graceful, tranquil body. Sometimes, emerging from her fragrant bath, warm and languid, she would start musing on the emptiness of life, its sorrow, labor, and vindictiveness. Her soul would be filled with sudden daring and burn with generous ardor. But then a draught would blow from a half-open window, and Anna Sergeyevna would shrink back into herself with a plaintive, almost angry feeling, and there was only one thing she needed at that particular moment, to get away from that nasty draught. Like all women who have not succeeded in loving, she wanted something without knowing what it was. Actually, she wanted nothing, though it seemed to her that she wanted everything. She could hardly endure the late Odintsov. She married him for practical reasons, though she might not have agreed to become his wife if she had not regarded him as a good-natured man. And she had conceived a hidden repugnance for all men, whom she could think of only as slovenly, clumsy, dull, feebly irritating creatures. Once, somewhere abroad, she had met a handsome young Swede, with a chivalrous expression and with honest eyes under an open brow. He made a strong impression on her, but that had not prevented her from returning to Russia. "A strange man, this doctor," she thought as she lay in her magnificent bed, on lace pillows under a light silk eiderdown. Anna Sergeyevna had inherited from her father some of his passion for luxury. She had been devoted to him, and he had idolized her, used to joke with her as though she were a friend and equal, confided his secrets to her, and asked her advice. Her mother she scarcely remembered. "This doctor is a strange man," she repeated to herself. She stretched, smiled, clasped her hands behind her head, ran her eyes over two pages of a stupid French novel, dropped the book, and fell asleep, pure and cold in her clean and fragrant linen. The following morning, Anna Sergeyevna went off botanizing with Bazarov immediately after breakfast, and returned just before dinner. Arkady did not go out anywhere, but spent about an hour with Katya. He was not bored in her company. She offered of her own accord to play the Mozart sonata again, but when Madame Odintsov came back at last, and he caught sight of her, he felt a sudden pain in his heart. She walked through the garden with a rather tired step. Her cheeks were burning, and her eyes shone more brightly than usual under her round straw hat. She was twirling in her fingers the thin stalk of some wild flower. Her light shawl had slipped down to her elbows, and the broad gray ribbons of her hat hung over her bosom. Bazarov walked beside her, self-confident and casual as ever, but Arkady disliked the expression of his face, although it was cheerful and even affectionate. Bazarov muttered, "Good day," between his teeth, and went straight to his room, and Madame Odintsov shook Arkady's hand absent-mindedly, and also walked past him. "Why good day?" thought Arkady, "as if we had not seen each other already today." End of chapter 16. Recording by Roger Moline. Chapter 17 of Fathers and Sons. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by Roger Moline. Fathers and Sons by Ivan Turgenev. Translated by Richard Hare. Chapter 17. As we all know, time sometimes flies like a bird, and sometimes crawls like a worm. But people may be unusually happy when they do not even notice whether time has passed quickly or slowly. In this way, Arkady and Bazarov spent a whole fortnight with Madame Odintsov. Such a result was achieved partly by the order and regularity which she had established in her house and mode of life. She adhered strictly to this order herself, and obliged others to submit to it as well. Everything during the day was done at a fixed time. In the morning, at 8 o'clock precisely, the whole party assembled for tea. From then till breakfast everyone did what he liked. The hostess herself was engaged with her bailiff. The estate was run on the rental system. Her butler and her head housekeeper. Before dinner the party met again for conversation or reading. The evening was devoted to walking, cards, or music. At 10:30 Anna Sergeyevna retired to her own room, gave her orders for the next day, and went to bed. Bazarov did not care for this measured and rather formal regularity in daily life, like gliding along rails, he called it. Livened footmen and stately butlers offended his democratic sentiments. He declared that once you went so far, you might as well dine in the English style, in tail-coats and white ties. He once spoke out his views on the subject to Anna Sergeyevna. Her manner was such that people never hesitated to say what they thought in front of her. She heard him out, and then remarked, "From your point of view, you are right, and perhaps in that way I am too much of a lady. But one must lead an orderly life in the country. Otherwise one is overcome by boredom." And she continued to go her own way. Bazarov grumbled, but both he and Arkady found life easy at Madame Odintsov's, just because everything in the house ran so smoothly on rails. Nevertheless, some change had occurred in both the young men since the first days of their stay at Nikolsko. Bazarov, whose company Anna Sergeyevna obviously enjoyed, though she rarely agreed with him, began to show quite unprecedented signs of unrest. He was easily irritated, spoke with reluctance, often looked angry, and could not sit still in one place, as if moved about by some irresistible desire. While Arkady, who had conclusively made up his mind that he was in love with Madame Odintsov, began to abandon himself to a quiet melancholy. This melancholy, however, did not prevent him from making friends with Katya. It even helped him to develop a more affectionate relationship with her. "She does not appreciate me," he thought. "So be it. But here is a kind person who does not repulse me." And his heart again knew the sweetness of generous emotions. Katya vaguely understood that he was seeking a kind of consolation in her company, and did not deny him or herself the innocent pleasure of a shy, confidential friendship. They did not talk to each other in Anna Sergeyevna's presence. Katya always shrank into herself under her sister's sharp eyes, while Arkady naturally could pay attention to nothing else when he was close to the object of his love. But he felt happy with Katya when he was alone with her. He knew that it was beyond his power to interest Madame Odintsov. He was shy and at a loss when he was left in her company. Nor had she anything special to say to him. He was too young for her. On the other hand, with Katya, Arkady felt quite at home. He treated her indulgently, encouraged her to talk about her own impressions of music, novels, verses, and other trifles, without noticing or acknowledging that these trifles interested him also.
Katya, for her part, did not interfere with his melancholy. Arkady felt at ease with Katya, and Madame Odintsov with Bazarov, so it usually happened that, after the two couples had been together for a while, they went off on their separate ways, especially during walks. Katya adored nature, and so did Arkady, though he did not dare to admit it. Madame Odintsov, like Bazarov, was rather indifferent to natural beauties. The continued separation of the two friends produced its consequences. Their relationship began to change. Bazarov gave up talking to Arkady about Madame Odintsov. He even stopped abusing her aristocratic habits. However, he continued to praise Katya, and advised Arkady only to restrain her sentimental tendencies, but his praises were hurried and perfunctory, his advice was dry, and in general he talked much less to Arkady than before. He seemed to avoid him. He was ill at ease in his presence. Arkady observed all this, but kept his observations to himself. The real cause of all this novelty was the feeling inspired in Bazarov by Madame Odintsov, a feeling which at once tortured and maddened him, and which he would have promptly denied with contemptuous laughter and cynical abuse if anyone had even remotely hinted at the possibility of what was happening within him. Bazarov was very fond of women and of feminine beauty, but love in the ideal, or, as he called it, romantic, sense, he described as idiocy, unpardonable folly. He regarded chivalrous feelings as a kind of deformity or disease, and had more than once expressed his amazement that Toggenburg and all the Minnesingers and troubadours had not been shut up in a lunatic asylum. "If a woman appeals to you," he used to say, "try to gain your end, and if you can't, well, just turn your back on her. There are lots more good fish in the sea." Madame Odintsov appealed to him. The rumors he had heard about her, the freedom and independence of her ideas, her obvious liking for him, all seemed to be in his favor. But he soon saw that with her he could not gain his end, and as for turning his back on her, he found, to his own amazement, he had no strength to do so. His blood was on fire directly he thought about her. He could easily have mastered his blood, but something else was taking possession of him, something he had never allowed, at which he had always scoffed, and at which his pride revolted. In his conversations with Anna Sergeyevna, he expressed more strongly than ever his calm indifference to any kind of romanticism. But when he was alone, he indignantly recognized romanticism in himself. Then he would go off into the forest, and stride about, smashing the twigs which came in his way, and cursing under his breath both her and himself. Or he would go into the hayloft in the barn, and obstinately closing his eyes, force himself to sleep, in which, of course, he did not always succeed. Suddenly he would imagine those chaste hands twining themselves around his neck, those proud lips responding to his kisses, those intelligent eyes looking with tenderness, yes, with tenderness, into his. And his head went round, and he forgot himself for a moment, till indignation boiled up again within him. He caught himself indulging in all sorts of shameful thoughts, as though a devil were mocking at him. It seemed to him sometimes that a change was also taking place in Madame Odintsov, that her face expressed something unusual, that perhaps... But at that point he would stamp on the ground, grind his teeth, or clench his fist. Meanwhile, he was not entirely mistaken. He had struck Madame Odintsov's imagination. He interested her. She thought a lot about him. In his absence she was not exactly bored, she did not wait for him with impatience,
but when he appeared she immediately became livelier. She enjoyed being left alone with him, and she enjoyed talking to him, even when he annoyed her or offended her taste and her refined habits. She seemed eager both to test him and to analyze herself. One day, walking with her in the garden, he abruptly announced in a surly voice that he intended to leave very soon to go to his father's place. She turned white, as if something had pricked her heart. She was surprised at the sudden pain she felt, and pondered long afterwards on what it could mean. Bazarov had told her about his departure without any idea of trying out the effect of the news upon her. He never fabricated stories. That same morning he had seen his father's bailiff, Timofeich, who had looked after him as a child. This Timofeich, an experienced and astute little old man, with faded yellow hair, a weather-beaten red face, and with tiny teardrops in his shrunken eyes, had appeared quite unexpectedly in front of Bazarov, in his short coat of thick gray-blue cloth, leather girdle, and tarred boots.
"Hello, old man, how are you?" exclaimed Bazarov. "How do you do, Evgeny Vasilich?" began the little old man, smiling with joy, so that his whole face was immediately covered with wrinkles. "What have you come here for? They sent you to find me, eh?"
"Fancy that, sir! How is it possible?"
mumbled Timofeich. He remembered the strict injunctions he had received from his master before he left.
"We were sent to town on the master's business, and heard news of your honor, so we turned off on the way, well, to have a look at your honor. As if we could think of disturbing you."
"Now then, don't lie," Bazarov cut him short. "It's no use your pretending this is on the road to the town."
Timofeich hesitated and said nothing.
"Is my father well?"
"Thank God, yes."
"And my mother?"
"Arina Vlasyevna, too, glory be to God."
"They're expecting me, I suppose."
The old man leaned his little head on one side.
"Oh, Evgeny Vasilich, how they wait for you! Believe me, it makes the heart ache to see them."
All right, don't rub it in. Tell them I'm coming soon."
"I obey,"
answered Timofeich with a sigh. As he left the house, he pulled his cap down with both hands over his head, then clambered into a dilapidated racing carriage, and went off at a trot, but not in the direction of the town. On the evening of that day, Madame Odintsov was sitting in one room with Bazarov, while Arkady walked up and down the hall, listening to Katya playing the piano. The princess had gone upstairs to her own room. She always loathed visitors, but she resented particularly the new raving lunatics, as she called them. In the main rooms she only sulked, but she made up for that in her own room by bursting into such a torrent of abuse in front of her maid that the cap danced on her head, wig and all. Madame Odintsov knew all about this.
"How is it that you are proposing to leave us?" she began. "What about your promises?"
Bazarov made a movement of surprise.
"What promises?"
"Have you forgotten? You intended to give me some chemistry lessons."
"Oh, it can't be helped. My father expects me. I can't put it off any longer. Besides, you can read Pelouse et Frémy, Notions Générales de Chimie. It's a good book and clearly written. You will find in it all you need."
"But you remember you assured me that a book can't take the place of—"
"I forgot how you put it, but you know what I mean. Don't you remember?"
"It can't be helped," repeated Bazarov.
"Why should you go?" said Madame Odintsov, dropping her voice. He glanced at her. Her head had fallen on the back of the armchair, and her arms, bare to the elbow, were folded over her bosom. She seemed paler in the light of the single lamp covered with a translucent paper shade. A broad white dress covered her completely in its soft folds. Even the tips of her feet, also crossed, were hardly visible.
"And why should I stay?" answered Bazarov.
Madame Odintsov turned her head slightly.
"You ask why? Have you not enjoyed staying here? Or do you think no one will miss you when you are gone?"
"I am sure of that."
Madame Odintsov was silent for a moment. "You are wrong in thinking so. But I won't believe you. You can't say that seriously."
Bazarov continued to sit motionless.
"Evgeny Vasilich, why don't you speak?"
"What am I to say to you? There is no point in missing people, and that applies to me even more than to most."
"Why so?"
"I am a straightforward, uninteresting person. I don't know how to talk."
"You are fishing for compliments, Evgeny Vasilich."
"That's not my custom. Don't you know yourself that the graceful side of life, which you value so highly, is beyond my reach?"
Madame Odintsov bit the corner of her handkerchief. "You may think what you like, but I shall find it dull when you go away."
"Arkady will stay on," remarked Bazarov. Madame Odintsov slightly shrugged her shoulders.
"It will be dull for me," she repeated.
"Really? In any case, you won't feel like that for long."
"What makes you suppose so?"
"Because you told me yourself that you are bored only when your orderly routine is disturbed. You have organized your life with such impeccable regularity that there can't be any place left in it for boredom or sadness, for any painful emotions."
"And do you consider that I am so impeccable, I mean, that I have organized my life so thoroughly?"
"I should think so. For example, in 5 minutes the clock will strike 10, and I already know in advance that you will turn me out of the room."
"No, I won't turn you out, Evgeny Vasilich. You may stay. Open that window. I feel half stifled."
Bazarov got up and pushed the window. It flew wide open with a crash. He had not expected it to open so easily. Also, his hands were trembling. The soft dark night looked into the room, with its nearly black sky, its faintly rustling trees, and the fresh fragrance of the pure open air.
"Draw the blind and sit down," said Madame Odintsov. "I want to have a talk with you before you go away. Tell me something about yourself. You never talk about yourself."
"I try to talk to you about useful subjects, Anna Sergeyevna."
"You are very modest, but I should like to know something about you, about your family and your father for whom you are forsaking us."
"Why is she talking like this?" thought Bazarov.
"All that is very uninteresting," he said aloud, "particularly for you. We are obscure people." "You regard me as an aristocrat?"
Bazarov lifted his eyes and looked at Madame Odintsov.
"Yes,"
he said with exaggerated harshness. She smiled.
"I see you know me very little, though of course you maintain that all people are alike, and that it is not worth while studying individuals. I will tell you the story of my life some time, but first tell me yours."
"I know you very little," repeated Bazarov. "Perhaps you are right. Perhaps, really, everyone is a riddle. You, for instance, you avoid society, you find it tedious, and you invited 2 students to stay with you. What makes you, with your beauty and your intelligence, live permanently in the country?"
"What? What did you say?"
Madame Odintsov interposed, eagerly.
"With my beauty?"
Bazarov frowned.
"Never mind about that," he muttered. "I wanted to say that I don't properly understand why you settled in the country."
"You don't understand it, yet you explain it to yourself somehow."
"Yes. I suppose that you prefer to remain in one place because you are self-indulgent, very fond of comfort and ease, and very indifferent to everything else."
Madame Odintsov smiled again.
"You absolutely refuse to believe that I am capable of being carried away by anything?"
Bazarov glanced at her from under his brows.
"By curiosity, perhaps, but in no other way."
"Indeed! Well, now I understand why we have become such friends. You are just like me."
"We have become friends," Bazarov muttered in a hollow voice.
"Yes, why, I had forgotten that you want to go away."
Bazarov got up. The lamp burned dimly in the darkening, isolated, fragrant room. The blind swayed from time to time and let in the stimulating freshness of the night and its mysterious whispers. Madame Odintsov did not stir, but a hidden excitement gradually took possession of her. It communicated itself to Bazarov. He suddenly felt he was alone with a young and beautiful woman.
"Where are you going?"
she said slowly. He made no answer and sank into a chair.
"And so you consider me a placid, pampered, self-indulgent creature," she continued in the same tone, and without taking her eyes off the window. "But I know so much about myself that I am unhappy."
"You unhappy? What for? Surely you can't attach any importance to slanderous gossip."
Madame Odintsov frowned. She was upset that he had understood her words in that way.
"Such gossip does not even amuse me, Evgeny Vasilich, and I am too proud to allow it to disturb me. I am unhappy because I have no desires, no love of life. You look at me suspiciously. You think those are the words of an aristocrat who sits in lace on a velvet chair. I don't deny for a moment that I like what you call comfort, and at the same time I have little desire to live. Reconcile that contradiction as best you can. Of course, it is all sheer romanticism to you."
Bazarov shook his head.
"You are healthy, independent, and rich. What more is left? What do you want?"
"What do I want?"
repeated Madame Odintsov, and sighed.
"I am very tired. I am old. I feel as if I had lived a very long time. Yes, I am old," she added, softly drawing the ends of her shawl over her bare arms.
Her eyes met Bazarov's, and she blushed slightly.
"So many memories are behind me. Life in Petersburg, wealth, then poverty, then my father's death, marriage, then traveling abroad, as was inevitable. So many memories, and so little worth remembering. And in front of me, a long, long road without a goal. I have not even the desire to go on."
"Are you so disappointed?" asked Bazarov.
"No," answered Madame Odintsov, speaking with deliberation, "but I am dissatisfied. I think if I were strongly attached to something—"
"You want to fall in love," Bazarov interrupted her.
"But you can't love. That is your unhappiness."
Madame Odintsov started looking at the shawl over her sleeve.
"Am I incapable of love?" she murmured.
"Hardly. But I was wrong in calling it unhappiness. On the contrary, a person should rather be pitied when that happens to him."
"When what happens to him?"
"Falling in love."
"And how do you know that?"
"I have heard it," answered Bazarov angrily.
"You are flirting," he thought. "You're bored and are playing with me for want of anything better to do, while I..." Truly, his heart was torn.
"Besides, you may be expecting too much," he said, leaning forward with his whole body and playing with the fringe of his chair.
"Perhaps. I want everything or nothing. A life for a life, taking one and giving up another without hesitation and beyond recall. Or else better have nothing."
"Well," observed Bazarov, "those are fair terms, and I'm surprised that so far you haven't found what you want."
"And do you think it would be easy to give oneself up entirely to anything?"
"Not easy, if you start reflecting, waiting, estimating your value, appraising yourself, I mean. But to give oneself unreasoningly is very easy."
"How can one help valuing oneself? If I have no value, then who needs my devotion?"
"That is not my affair. It is for another person to investigate my value. The main thing is to know how to devote oneself."
Madame Odintsov leaned forward from the back of her chair.
"You speak as if you had experienced it all yourself," she said. "It happened to come up in the course of our conversation, but all that, as you know, is not in my line."
"But could you devote yourself unreservedly?"
"I don't know. I don't want to boast."
Madame Odintsov said nothing, and Bazarov remained silent. The sounds of the piano floated up to them from the drawing-room.
"How is it that Katya is playing so late?" observed Madame Odintsov.
Bazarov got up. "Yes, it really is late now. Time for you to go to bed."
"Wait a little. Why should you hurry? I want to say one word to you."
"What is it?"
"Wait a little," whispered
Madame Odintsov. Her eyes rested on Bazarov. It seemed as if she was examining him attentively. He walked across the room, then suddenly came up to her hurriedly, said good-bye, squeezed her hand so that she almost screamed, and went out. She raised her compressed fingers to her lips, breathed on them, then rose impulsively from her armchair and moved rapidly towards the door, as if she wanted to bring Bazarov back. A maid entered the room carrying a decanter on a silver tray. Madame Odintsov stood still, told the maid she could go, and sat down again, deep in thought. Her hair slipped loose and fell in a dark coil over her shoulders. The lamp went on burning for a long time in her room while she still sat there motionless, only from time to time rubbing her hands, which were bitten by the cold night air. Bazarov returned to his bedroom 2 hours later, his boots wet with dew, looking disheveled and gloomy. He found Arkady sitting at the writing-desk with a book in his hands, his coat buttoned up to the neck.
"Not in bed yet?" he exclaimed, with what sounded like annoyance.
"You were sitting a long time with Anna Sergeyevna this evening," said Arkady without answering his question. "Yes, I sat with her all the time you were playing the piano with Katerina Sergeyevna."
"I was not playing," began Arkady, and stopped. He felt that tears were rising in his eyes, and he did not want to cry in front of his sarcastic friend.
End of chapter 17. Recording by Roger Moline. Chapter 18 of Fathers and Sons. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by Roger Moline. Fathers and Sons by Ivan Turgenev. Translated by Richard Hare. Chapter 18.
The next day, when Madame Odintsov came down to tea, Bazarov sat for a long time bending over his cup, then suddenly glanced up at her. She turned towards him as if he had touched her, and he fancied that her face was paler since the night before. She soon went off to her own room and did not reappear till breakfast. It had rained since early morning, so that there was no question of going for walks. The whole party assembled in the drawing-room. Arkady took up the last number of a journal and began to read. The princess, as usual, first tried to express angry amazement by her facial expression, as though he were doing something indecent, then glared angrily at him, but he paid no attention to her.
"Evgeny Vasilich," said Anna Sergeyevna, "let us go to my room. I want to ask you, you mentioned a textbook yesterday."
She got up and went to the door. The princess looked round as if she wanted to say, "Look at me, see how shocked I am," and again stared at Arkady, but he merely raised his head, and exchanging glances with Katya, near whom he was sitting, he went on reading. Madame Odintsov walked quickly into her study. Bazarov followed her without raising his eyes, and only listening to the delicate swish and rustle of her silk dress gliding in front of him. Madame Odintsov sat down in the same armchair in which she had sat the evening before, and Bazarov also sat down in his former place.
"Well, what is that book called?" she began, after a short silence.
"Pelouse et Frey, Notion Générale," answered Bazarov. "However, I might recommend to you also Ganon, Traité élémentaire de physique expérimentale. In that book the illustrations are clearer, and as a complete textbook..." Madame Odintsov held out her hand.
"Evgeny Vasilich, excuse me, but I didn't invite you here to discuss textbooks. I wanted to go on with our conversation of last night. You went away so suddenly. It won't bore you?"
"I am at your service, Anna Sergeyevna. But what were we talking about last night?" Madame Odintsov cast a sidelong glance at Bazarov.
"We were talking about happiness, I believe. I told you about myself. By the way, I just mentioned the word happiness. Tell me, why is it that even when we are enjoying, for instance, music, a beautiful evening, or a conversation with agreeable people, it all seems to be rather a hint of immeasurable happiness existing somewhere apart, rather than genuine happiness, such, I mean, as we ourselves can really possess? Why is it? Or perhaps you never experienced that kind of feeling."
"You know the saying, 'Happiness is where we are not,'" replied Bazarov. "Besides, you told me yesterday that you are discontented. But it is as you say, no such ideas ever enter my head."
"Perhaps they seem ridiculous to you?"
"No, they just don't enter my head."
"Really? Do you know, I should very much like to know what you do think about."
"How? I don't understand you."
"Listen, I have long wanted to have a frank talk with you. There is no need to tell you, for you know it yourself, that you are not an ordinary person. You are still young, your whole life lies before you. For what are you preparing yourself? What future awaits you? I mean to say, what purpose are you aiming at? In what direction are you moving? What is in your heart? In short, who and what are you?"
"You surprise me, Anna Sergeyevna. You know that I am studying natural science, and who I..."
"Yes, who are you?"
"I have already told you that I am going to be a district doctor." Anna Sergeyevna made an impatient movement.
"What do you say that for? You don't believe it yourself. Arkady might answer me in that way, but not you."
How does Arkady come in?
Stop! Is it possible you could content yourself with such a humble career? And aren't you always declaring that medicine doesn't exist for you? You, with your ambition, a district doctor? You answer me like that in order to put me off, because you have no confidence in me. But you know, Evgeny Vasilich, I should be able to understand you. I also have been poor and ambitious, like you. Perhaps I went through the same trials as you.
That's all very well, Anna Sergeyevna, but you must excuse me. I am not in the habit of talking freely about myself in general, and there is such a gulf between you and me.
In what way, a gulf? Do you mean to tell me again that I am an aristocrat? Enough of that, Evgeny Vasilich. I thought I had convinced you.
And apart from all that, broke in Bazarov, how can we want to talk and think about the future, which for the most part doesn't depend on ourselves? If an opportunity turns up of doing something, so much the better, and if it doesn't turn up, at least one can be glad that one didn't idly gossip about it beforehand.
You call a friendly conversation gossip? Or perhaps you consider me as a woman unworthy of your confidence? I know you despise us all.
I don't despise you, Anna Sergeyevna, and you know that.
No, I don't know anything. But let us suppose so. I understand your disinclination to talk about your future career, but as to what is taking place within you now...
Taking place, repeated Bazarov, as if I were some kind of government or society? In any case, it is completely uninteresting, and besides, can a person always speak out loud of everything which takes place within him?
But I don't see why you shouldn't speak freely about everything you have in your heart.
Can you? Asked Bazarov.
I can, answered Anna Sergeyevna, after a moment's hesitation.
Bazarov bowed his head. You are luckier than I.
As you like, she continued. But still, something tells me that we did not get to know each other for nothing, that we shall become good friends. I am sure that your constraint, your reserve, will disappear eventually.
So you have noticed in me reserve, and, how did you put it, constraint?
Yes.
Bazarov got up and went to the window. And would you like to know the reason for this reserve? Would you like to know what is happening within me?
Yes,
repeated Madame Odintsov, with a sort of dread which she did not quite understand. And you will not be angry?
No.
No?
Bazarov was standing with his back to her. Let me tell you, then, that I love you like a fool, like a madman. There, you've got that out of me.
Madame Odintsov raised both her hands in front of her, while Bazarov pressed his forehead against the window-pane. He was breathing hard. His whole body trembled visibly. But it was not the trembling of youthful timidity, not the sweet awe of the first declaration that possessed him. It was a passion beating within him, a powerful, heavy passion, not unlike fury, and perhaps akin to it. Madame Odintsov began to feel both frightened and sorry for him.
"Evgeny Vasilich,"
she murmured, and her voice rang with unconscious tenderness. He quickly turned round, threw a devouring look at her, and seizing both her hands, he suddenly pressed her to him. She did not free herself at once from his embrace, but a moment later she was standing far away in a corner and looking from there at Bazarov. He rushed towards her.
"You misunderstood me,"
she whispered in hurried alarm. It seemed that if he had made one more step she would have screamed. Bazarov bit his lips and went out. Half an hour later, a maid gave Anna Sergeyevna a note from Bazarov. It consisted merely of one line. "Am I to leave today, or can I stop till tomorrow?"
"Why should you leave? I did not understand you. You did not understand me,"
Anna Sergeyevna answered. But to herself she thought,
"I did not understand myself either."
She did not show herself till dinner-time, and kept walking up and down her room, with her arms behind her back, sometimes stopping in front of the window or the mirror, and sometimes slowly rubbing her handkerchief over her neck, on which she still seemed to feel a burning spot. She asked herself what had impelled her to get that out of him, as Bazarov had expressed it, to secure his confidence, and whether she had really suspected nothing. "I am to blame," she concluded aloud, "but I could not have foreseen this." She became pensive and blushed when she recalled Bazarov's almost animal face when he had rushed at her. "Or," she suddenly uttered aloud, stopping short and shook her curls. She caught sight of herself in the mirror, her tossed-back head, with a mysterious smile on the half-closed, half-open eyes and lips, told her, it seemed, in a flash, something at which she herself felt confused. "No," she decided at last. "God alone knows what it would lead to. He couldn't be trifled with. After all, peace is better than anything else in the world." Her own peace of mind was not deeply disturbed, but she felt sad, and once even burst into tears, without knowing why, but not on account of the insult she had just experienced. She did not feel insulted. She was more inclined to feel guilty. Under the influence of various confused impulses, the consciousness that life was passing her by, the craving for novelty, she had forced herself to move on to a certain point, forced herself also to look beyond it. And there she had seen not even an abyss, but only sheer emptiness, or something hideous. End of chapter 18. Recording by Roger Moline. Chapter 19 of Fathers and Sons. This LibriVox recording is in the public domain. Recording by Roger Moline. Fathers and Sons by Ivan Turgenev. Translated by Richard Hare. Chapter 19. In spite of her masterly self-control and superiority to every kind of prejudice, Madame Odintsov felt awkward when she entered the dining-room for dinner. However, the meal went off quite satisfactorily. Porfiry Platonych turned up and told various anecdotes. He had just returned from the town. Among other things, he announced that the governor had ordered his secretaries on special commissions to wear spurs, in case he might want to send them off somewhere on horseback, at greater speed. Arkady talked in an undertone to Katya and attended diplomatically to the princess. Bazarov maintained a grim and obstinate silence. Madame Odintsov glanced at him twice, not furtively, but straight in his face, which looked stern and choleric, with downcast eyes and a contemptuous determination stamped on every feature, and she thought, "No, no, no." After dinner, she went with the whole company into the garden, and seeing that Bazarov wanted to speak to her, she walked a few steps to one side and stopped. He approached her, but even then he did not raise his eyes, and said in a husky voice, "I have to apologize to you, Anna Sergeyevna. You must be furious with me." "No, I'm not angry with you, Evgeny Vasilich, but I'm upset." "So much the worse. In any case, I've been punished enough.
I find myself, I'm sure you will agree, in a very stupid position. You wrote to me, why go away? But I can't stay, and I don't want to. Tomorrow I shall no longer be here.
Evgeny Vasilich, why are you...
Why am I going away?
No, I didn't mean that.
The past won't return, Anna Sergeyevna, but sooner or later this was bound to happen. Therefore, I must go. I can imagine only one condition which would have enabled me to stay, but that condition will never be. For surely, excuse my impudence, you don't love me, and never will love me. Bazarov's eyes glittered for a moment from under his dark brows. Anna Sergeyevna did not answer him.
I'm afraid of this man, was the thought that flashed through her mind.
Farewell, then, muttered Bazarov, as if he guessed her thought, and he turned back to the house. Anna Sergeyevna followed him slowly, and calling Katya to her, she took her arm. She kept Katya by her side till the evening. She did not play cards, and kept on laughing, which was not at all in keeping with her pale and worried face. Arkady was perplexed, and looked at her, as young people do, constantly wondering, what can it mean? Bazarov shut himself up in his room, and only reappeared at tea-time. Anna Sergeyevna wanted to say a kind word to him, but she could not bring herself to address him. An unexpected incident rescued her from her embarrassment. The butler announced the arrival of Sitnikov. Words can hardly describe the strange figure cut by the young champion of progress as he fluttered into the room. He had decided with his characteristic impudence to go to the country to visit a woman whom he hardly knew, who had never invited him, but with whom, as he had ascertained, such talented people and intimate friends of his were staying. Nevertheless, he was trembling to the marrow of his bones with fright, and instead of bringing out the excuses and compliments which he had learned by heart beforehand, he muttered something idiotic about Evdosya Kukshina having sent him to inquire after Anna Sergeyevna's health, and that Arkady Nikolaevich had always spoken to him in terms of the highest praise. At this point he faltered and lost his presence of mind so completely that he sat down on his hat. However, since no one turned him out, and Anna Sergeyevna even introduced him to her aunt and sister, he soon recovered himself and began to chatter to his heart's content. The introduction of something commonplace is often useful in life. It relieves an overstrained tension, and sobers down self-confident or self-sacrificing feelings by recalling how closely it is related to them. With Sitnikov's appearance, everything became somehow duller, more trivial, and easier. They all even ate supper with a better appetite, and went to bed half an hour earlier than usual. "I can now repeat to you," said Arkady, as he lay down in bed, to Bazarov, who was also undressing, "what you once said to me. Why are you so melancholy? It looks as though you were fulfilling some sacred duty." For some time past, a tone of artificially free and easy banter had sprung up between the two young men, always a sure sign of secret dissatisfaction or of unexpressed suspicion. "I'm going to my father's place tomorrow," said Bazarov. Arkady raised himself and leaned on his elbow. He felt both surprised and somehow pleased. "Ah," he remarked, "and is that why you are sad?" Bazarov yawned. "If you know too much, you grow old."
"And what about Anna Sergeyevna?"
"What about her? I mean, will she let you go?" "I'm not in her employment." Arkady became thoughtful while Bazarov lay down and turned his face to the wall. Some minutes passed in silence.
"Evgeny!" suddenly exclaimed Arkady.
"Well?"
"I shall also leave tomorrow."
Bazarov made no answer.
"Only I shall go home," continued Arkady. "We will go together as far as Kokhlovsky, and there you can get horses at Fedot's. I should have been delighted to meet your people, but I'm afraid I should only get in their way and yours. Of course you're coming back to stay with us."
"I've left all my things with you," said Bazarov, without turning around.
"Why doesn't he ask me why I'm going away? And just as suddenly as he is," thought Arkady. "As a matter of fact, why am I going, and why is he?" he went on reflecting. He could find no satisfactory answer to his own question, though his heart was filled with some bitter feeling. He felt he would find it hard to part from this life to which he had grown so accustomed, but for him to stay on alone would also be queer. "Something has happened between them," he reasoned to himself. "What's the good of my hanging around here after he is gone? Obviously I should bore her stiff and lose even the little that remains for me." He began to conjure up a picture of Anna Sergeyevna. Then other features gradually eclipsed the lovely image of the young widow. "I'm sorry about Katya, too," Arkady whispered to his pillow, on which a tear had already fallen. Suddenly he shook back his hair and said aloud, "What the devil brought that idiotic Sitnikov here?" Bazarov started to move about in his bed, and then made the following answer.
"I see you're still stupid, my boy. Sitnikovs are indispensable to us. For me, don't you understand, I need such blockheads. In fact, it's not for the gods to take bricks."
"Oh-ho!" thought Arkady, and only then he saw in a flash the whole fathomless depth of Bazarov's conceit. "So you and I are gods, in that case? At least, you're a god, but I suppose I'm one of the blockheads."
"Yes," repeated Bazarov gloomily. "You're still stupid."
Madame Odintsov expressed no particular surprise when Arkady told her the next day that he was going with Bazarov. She seemed tired and preoccupied. Katya looked at them with silent gravity. The princess went so far as to cross herself under her shawl, so that he could not help noticing it. But Sitnikov, on the other hand, was most disconcerted. He had just appeared for breakfast in a smart new costume, not this time in the Slavophile fashion. The previous evening he had astonished the man appointed to look after him by the quantity of linen he had brought, and now, all of a sudden, his comrades were deserting him. He took a few quick steps, darted round like a hunted hare on the edge of a wood, and abruptly, almost with terror, almost with a wail, he announced that he also proposed to leave. Madame Odintsov made no attempt to detain him.
"My carriage is very comfortable," added the unlucky young man, turning to Arkady. "I can take you, while Evgeny Vasilich takes your tarantass, so that will be even more convenient." "But really, it's quite off your road, and it's a long way to where I live." "Never mind, that's nothing. I've plenty of time. Besides, I have business in that direction."
"Selling vodka?" asked Arkady, rather too contemptuously. But Sitnikov was already reduced to such despair that he did not even laugh as he usually did.
"I assure you, my carriage is extremely comfortable," he muttered, "and there will be room for everyone."
"Don't upset Monsieur Sitnikov by refusing," murmured Anna Sergeyevna. Arkady glanced at her and bowed his head significantly. The visitors left after breakfast. As she said good-bye to Bazarov, Madame Odintsov held out her hand to him and said, "We shall meet again, shan't we?"
"As you command," answered Bazarov.
"In that case, we shall." Arkady was the first to go out into the porch. He climbed into Sitnikov's carriage. The butler tucked him in respectfully, but Arkady would gladly have struck him or burst into tears. Bazarov seated himself in the tarantass. When they reached Kokhlovsky, Arkady waited till Fedo, the keeper of the posting station, had harnessed the horses. Then, going up to the tarantass, he said with his old smile to Bazarov, "Evgeny, take me with you. I want to come to your place."
"Get in," muttered Bazarov between his teeth.
Sitnikov, who had been walking up and down by the wheels of his carriage, whistling boldly, could only open his mouth and gape when he heard these words, while Arkady coolly pulled his luggage out of the carriage, took his seat beside Bazarov, and, bowing politely to his former traveling companion, shouted, "Drive off!" The tarantass rolled away and was soon out of sight. Sitnikov, utterly confused, looked at his coachman, but he was flicking his whip round the tail of the offside horse. Finally, Sitnikov jumped into his carriage, and yelling at two passing peasants, "Put on your caps, fools!" he drove to the town, where he arrived very late, and where the next day, at Madame Kukshin's, he spoke severely about two disgustingly stuck-up and ignorant fellows. Sitting in the tarantass alongside Bazarov, Arkady pressed his friend's hand warmly, and for a long time he said nothing. It seemed as though Bazarov appreciated both Arkady's action and his silence. He had not slept at all the previous night, neither had he smoked, and for several days he had scarcely eaten anything. His thin profile stood out darkly and sharply from under his cap, which was pulled down over his eyebrows. "Well, brother," he said at last, "give me a cigar. But look, I say, is my tongue yellow?" "It's yellow," answered Arkady.
"Yes, and the cigar has no taste. The machine is out of gear."
"You have certainly changed lately," observed Arkady.
"That's nothing. We shall soon recover. One thing bothers me. My mother is so soft-hearted. If your tummy doesn't grow round as a barrel, and you don't eat 10 times a day, she's in despair. My father's all right. He's been everywhere, and known all the ups and downs. No, I can't smoke," he added, and flung the cigar away into the dusty road.
"Do you think it's another 16 miles to your place?" asked Arkady.
"Yes, but ask this wise man."
He pointed to the peasant sitting on the box, a laborer of Fedot's. But the wise man only answered,
"Who's to know? Miles aren't measured hereabouts,"
and went on swearing under his breath at the shaft horse for kicking with her headpiece, by which he meant jerking her head.
"Yes, yes," began Bazarov. "It's a lesson for you, my young friend, an instructive example. The devil knows what rubbish it is. Every man hangs by a thread. Any minute the abyss may open under his feet, and yet he must go and invest for himself all kinds of troubles and spoil his life."
"What are you hinting at?" asked Arkady.
"I'm not hinting at anything. I'm saying plainly that we both behaved like fools. What's the use of talking about it? But I've noticed in hospital work, the man who's angry with his illness, he's sure to get over it."
"I don't quite understand you," remarked Arkady. "It seems you have nothing to complain about."
"Well, if you don't quite understand me, I'll tell you this. To my mind, it's better to break stones on the road than to let a woman get the mastery of even the end of one's little finger. That's all."
Bazarov was about to utter his favorite word, romanticism, but checked himself and said,
"Rubbish!"
"You won't believe me now, but I'll tell you. You and I fell into feminine society, and very nice we found it. but we throw off that sort of society. It's like taking a dip in cold water on a hot day. A man has no time for these trifles. A man must be untamed, says an old Spanish proverb. Now you, my wise friend, he added, addressing the peasant on the box, I suppose you have a wife? The peasant turned his dull, bleary-eyed face towards the two young friends. A wife? Yes. How could it be otherwise? Do you beat her? My wife? Anything may happen. We don't beat her without a reason. That's fine. Well, and does she beat you?
The peasant tugged at the reins.
What things you say, sir! You like a joke.
He was obviously offended.
You hear, Arkady Nikolaevich. But we've been properly beaten. That's what comes of being educated people.
Arkady gave a forced laugh, while Bazarov turned away and did not open his mouth again for the rest of the journey. Those 16 miles seemed to Arkady quite like double the distance. But at last, on the slope of some rising ground, the little village where Bazarov's parents lived came into sight. Close to it, in a young birch copse, stood a small house with a thatched roof. Two peasants with their hats on stood near the first hut swearing at each other.
"You're a great swine," said one. "You're worse than a little sucking pig."
"And your wife's a witch," retorted the other.
By their unconstrained behavior, remarked Bazarov to Arkady, and by the playfulness of their phraseology, you can guess that my father's peasants are not overmuch oppressed. But there he is himself, coming out on the steps of the house. He must have heard the bells. It's him, all right. I recognize his figure.
Aye, aye, only how gray he's grown, poor old chap.
End of chapter 19. Recording by Roger Moline.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.